Blog Talk Radio.
General quarters. Security condition 3.
GQ. Security 3, sir. General quarters 3. Intruder alert. GQ 3. Intruder alert.
Good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the podcast from the Genie Bottle. And I am your hostess, your cruise director, and your spiritual advisor, Madame Perry. And I am, but you can call me Jennifer Perry or Jen, and I am just delighted to be here and have you here. You know, I was at dinner with some people tonight earlier, and they were talking about podcasts and their favorite podcast and when they like to listen to them, enjoy them. And just so, just if you listened last week, you know, I'm broadcasting tonight live from Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Came here with my husband for the IBC convention, which is the largest entertainment and broadcast and communications trade show on the planet. And so having dinner with a lot of these guys that keep the world in communication with each other and satellites and so forth, and they were talking about how much they love to consume entertainment and information through podcasts. And I said, well, yeah, and we support each other a lot too, because I think podcasters aren't that. We don't have to be competitive. You can like lots of us. And so they're going to be listening tonight. So I want to say hello to all the guys out there. And, you know, coming up soon, we're going to be having, we have a lot of music guests before, but we're going to be having some more people. As you know, Kazem Sultan is going to be back out on the road in January. Well, you may not know, but as he did earlier this year, with Kazem Sultan's Utopia, which will have Greg Hawkes and Prairie Prince in there. And I think Gil Asayas, who was with Todd's Utopia tour this year. And so he will be back to talk about that, as well as Greg Hawkes and Prairie Prince. And I'm so excited about that. Next week, we have three authors from the Crystal Lake Publishing, Tales of the Lake, Volume 5, and it's Lucy Snyder, Laura Blackwell, and Gemma Files, and we tried to have them on last week, but we had lots of issues, and Kenneth Kane, another author, and he's the editor of that book, Tales of the Lake 5, he said that he thinks this probably had to do with the heavy storm with Hurricane Florence and so forth, and the communication damage, but hey, we're going to have them all back next week, and you're going to love that too, as well as tonight. Now, tonight's guest, also, once again, you guys know, I have bragged so much and had so many guests here that were published by Crystal Lake Publishing, and why not? Every single one is a winner. Tonight's guest has got... I feel like I almost don't know where to begin, but he's known as a writer of dark fiction. Some of his books' titles are Poisonous, Pieces of Chaos, and his newest, The Mourner's Cradle, which is what we're going to be talking about tonight. So it's this brand new, hot off press work. He's also had a lot of short works and featured in several publications. He's worked with Morpheus Tales as an editor of both the Dark Sorcery and Urban Horror special issues of the magazine. He's somewhere out in the, I was going to say it's in the mountain, what was it, Mountain Time, I think they call it. And I'm not going to tell you much more about him because I like to keep some of these, I'm not going to tell you where he lives or anything or how many cats he has or whatever, because I like to give a little bit of mystery to some of these people, especially my horror writers. So I'm not going to wait any longer. I want to bring right in here to the studio, right in here to the genie bottle, give him a nice fluffy cushion, and welcome Tommy B. Smith. Tommy, welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'll go ahead and tell everyone how many cats I have. We actually have three.
Three? Okay. Okay. Now, who chooses the cats? Who brings them in? You or your wife?
It's been kind of a combination. We have our oldest cat. She picked out when he was a little kitten. And then the others, one of them we came by, she's a Bengal cat. And we actually, some people were given her as a gift, and they weren't really cat people. Actually, we went over there to get her, to take her in, and they had stuffed cats. So, you know, wild cats that had actually been hunted. So we thought we better get her on out of there and bring her home with us. And so she's been with us since. And
excuse me. Yes, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you got her out of there. I would have felt kind of creepy about it, too.
Yeah, she's doing pretty well with us. So.
Oh, good, good. Nice to meet you. All right, so you've got this. You are on a real media tour right now, and I am thrilled to be part of it. In fact, I think on the first podcast you're on with this media tour.
That's right.
So, well, good. I have to spoil you for everyone else. So I am thrilled about, yeah, you're busy, you're hustling, and this is your brand new book is this your first book from that's published by Crystal Lake Publishing?
Yes, it's my first book with Crystal Lake Publishing. I did have a short story back in, speaking of the Tales from the Lake series, there was Tales from the Lake Volume 3. I had a short story in that one, Chemical Oasis. But it is my first book with Crystal Lake Publishing.
Okay, fantastic. And so the title of the book is The Mourner's Cradle, and the subtitle, The Widow's Journey. So since this is fresh, it's brand new, tell us all about it. Not all about it, but just enough to tease everybody into it.
Well, The Mourner's Cradle is the story of Anne Sharp, and then as the story opens, not at the very beginning, but as her story opens within the book, she's alone in her house in an empty bed, and her husband is no longer there, and so her life, the life she's known for many years now, is abruptly changed, and she feels very alone, and the way she deals with that, the way she deals with that profound loss is unique to her, as when anyone goes through a very serious loss, everyone's method of grieving is different and hits everyone quite differently and can be quite wrenching. So that's what starts her story. And then, of course, there are a lot of loose ends. Her husband was an independent researcher, so those loose ends that remain from his life sort of returned to plague her. And, for instance, there was a rival, almost an enemy that her husband had, and that creates a lot of issues pretty quickly in the story. And also she wants to pick up the aspects of her husband's research and try to understand exactly what he was so fascinated by and basically what stole so much time from them, from their relationship, over these past couple of years, why he was so obsessed with that. And, you know, there's so much time, more time they could have spent together. So she just wants to understand, and it's sort of her quest to understand and what was happening and what this enigma is, the mourner's cradle that her husband Damon was so obsessed with. And that's what starts her journey.
How long is the book? Is it a novella? Is it a full-length novel?
It's a novel. It's a novel on the shorter end. So it's a short novel, I would say.
Okay.
So right. I don't know if that's helpful or not. It's longer than a novella, but shorter than a gigantic tome. So it's a.
Okay. And I was looking at some of the reviews, and I'm going to quote from some of those in just a minute. But when we start with the story of Anne Sharp's story and about her husband as a researcher, can you tell me what what gave you the idea for this premise? Where you begin?
There are a few different aspects to that. Well, when I started sort of going into this territory, it was back during a period of time when I actually found myself sitting at a lot of funerals, and I guess it's something anyone has to deal with as they get older, is watching the people that have been a part of their lives for so long slip away, and sitting at a lot of funerals and observing, you know, people who are close to you, observing how they deal with the loss. And it happened just a number of different times, so there's not a specific instance that I'm thinking of, but it just, you know, sort of become immersed in that for a while. And then so there was that sort of emotional aspect to it, but then there's also the historical aspect to it, and looking at, you know, some of the things I'm interested in, some of the things I've read about, and, you know, interested in why things are the way they are now, and how, you know, humankind has developed and civilization has developed over millennia, and looking at, you know, some of the South American history that we really don't have a whole lot of information about, like the Norte Chico people, who really didn't have a lot of, you know, writing and reading that we know of, and had a culture, and we have artifacts and the like, and their structures, but, you know, there's a lot of mystery around that. And so exploring some of that, exploring some of the unknown, the things we're still seeking answers to. And then looking back to the period of time the story takes place in the late 70s, we really didn't, there's a lot of information we have now that we didn't have then. So looking back at the perspectives some of the people might have taken on some of these matters. So there's the combination.
So to look at this, I was looking at pophorror.com, and Jennifer, I know you've read this already, and make sure I pronounce her name correctly, Jennifer Bonge's review. And going into the middle of the review, because in the beginning she says, you know, what she likes, one of the things she likes so much about it and calls it one of the best books she's read lately, is she says this book is nonstop action. It grabs your attention at the beginning and does not let go. A character-driven story. Characters are written well. You find yourself relating to each and every one. And here's this. I got to know what you think of this. She says, Anne Sharp is one of my favorite leads in a novel, hands down. That's saying something considering how many books I've read. She's smart, independent, and for lack of a better word, a total badass. With a softer side to it as well, but does not put up with much nonsense. Okay.
Well, I think that's awesome that because you never really know what sort of reaction you're going to have when you create something, you put it out there. But you know, you create it from pieces of yourself and pieces of things that are part of you and a part of your universe. And, you know, as it clashes with the universe, everyone else's lives and. You know, so you never know what that mix is going to produce. And so The Mourner's Cradle, I mean, it was an experience for me just writing it. So, you know, I'm very pleased that she enjoyed it as much as she did. And the reviews, I'm very, very pleased to see that the reviews have been coming out have been very, very good. So.
Yeah, definitely. And for anybody who still might be, I mean, you can go to pophorror.com to read this, but for anybody who's still thinking, should I go on over to you know, to Amazon or wherever and get it? She said, you know, she toward the end, she said, I enjoy tales set in different time periods, and Tommy B. Smith kept the story consistent, including many details that remind you that it's 1979. And then it goes on about the tension being spot on and everything. And this is what, you know, when somebody reviews books, like she does a lot, that's what you want to know. You want to know, does she, well, the fact that she, it kept her involved. She liked the character, she liked the pace, and you know, that's what we look for. By the way, this would be a good time to stop and say, if people are listening live right now, listen to us live on, what is this, Tuesday the 18th, 6 p.m. Mountain Central Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 1 a.m. in the Netherlands, and you want to talk to Tommy B. Smith, you can call us at 646-716-9922. That number is 646-716-9922. Blog Talk Radio promises it's a toll-free call in the continental U.S. Also, for people, and I have a lot of these people, Tommy, people who say are listening and maybe they don't have access to a phone, or maybe they're at the day gig or the night gig and can't use a phone, they'll usually message me through Facebook or something with a question or comment. So we're not going to leave anybody out. If you have a question, let us know. So, okay, so where was I? All right, so how long did it take you to write this? Because you've obviously had to do a lot of research in not only the time period, but travel Peru, and then what her husband was working on, his projects, to keep it all so legit.
Let's see. That's a very good question. Let's see. I'm trying to remember. It's actually been a little while since I did write that book. We think maybe it took a year or so. I wrote first version of it, first draft, and then came back to it. And of course, there's a matter of editing, the revision, and then the editing, and all of that. And then of course, the book actually had kind of a bumpy ride just trying to get it published. And I was happy to land it with Crystal Lake Publishing. You know, I've published all these excellent titles. You know, and I was a reader of theirs prior to that. So. But yeah, I actually had others interested. But since I've been in this field, I've seen so many publishing companies and publishing houses and rise and topple. And there was kind of a bumpy ride just trying to get the book into print. But and now it finally is after all that. But, you know, so. I guess yeah. Writing it probably took about a year, but then all the rest of it took a lot longer. So.
Well, because I say there had to have been a lot of things to, talk about just the publishing part. You know, you know a thing or two about publishing, obviously, as well as writing. And I know there are times when I've been to Book Expo America 3 times.
Oh, yes.
And there are some... You know, I remember there were some publishing houses I've seen there a couple of times that really seemed to have a lot going on. They seemed to be thriving and big promotions, all things going. And then a few couple of years later, there's nothing there, and it can usually be behind, you know, poor management or something, and you just think it's just... And it's a shame. Publishing has a hard enough time as it is these days. But, yeah, Crystal Lake is growing well. So... keeping it, and most of the action takes place in, or the story starts in 1979. Am I right?
That's right, and it starts in Ann Sharp's hometown / city of St. Charles.
So how was it difficult to keep true to that time period as far as like with no cell phones or certain things like that? Or
I kind of enjoy going back to that time, but really it fit into the timeline. I wrote a horror novella some years ago, Poisonous, and which takes place after that, sometime after that. And it's just a different story, but it takes place entirely in St. Charles, which is and so the setting sort of is, the Mourner's Cradle setting begins there, and you know then it takes off to South America and all of that. But it was more just I wanted to set something back before that time period when the city was a different place and before tragedy and certain things happened in the city that made it the place it is in the novella. And so I just I thought there was a lot of history just in that city to explore, as well as you know the history of the Mourner's Cradle and all of that, which was kind of goes back to actual history. But so that was sort of what inspired that. But then it was enjoyable to write a story based in that time period as well.
Since it's new, I know you've had reviews, but since it's very new, I would think that a lot of readers may have told you this already. But to me, that's a lot of what gives it. a lot of depth and a lot of texture, if you will, to the story, that it's not so far back that it's like a foreign place, you know, maybe 50 or 100 years back.
Right.
But just being that, that's what, about 37 years ago, maybe, or something like that. Or almost 40 years, just to think it's just enough to where it's almost like when you watch old TV shows from that period, you know, and seems to have like a flavor and a movement and just kind of a vibe of its own. And that seems, it seems to me that that sort of takes its own personality as almost a character in a story from that time.
That's an interesting way to look at it. To me, I just sort of, and I'm not going to tell, I won't tell everyone how old I am, but I will say that I remember when the world was a very different place. And so, you know, there's some of that, you know, on the personal end that I can reach back to as well for inspiration.
Okay, well, speaking of inspiration, now, a writer of dark fiction, what inspires someone to write dark fiction? Because, as you know, I remember once when I had Jasper Bark on, another slate writer, and I said something about one of the last, you know, I guess I haven't read that many horror, dark fiction, whatever, in years and years, until I began doing this podcast. And I said, I'm just surprised and so delighted with the authors. And Jasper Barker saying, oh, yes, well, you really can clean us up and take us out. We can be very delightful. But only in his British accent. So what inspired you? I mean, when you first began reading, began loving books or following particular authors or genres, What were your favorites? What drew you to this style of book? And then what made you want to create your own? What inspired you to create your own stories?
I think inspiration, inspiration can come from all sorts of different angles. And with me, it has. And when I was younger, we had a big utility room full of books, and we didn't have the internet at that time. And so, you know, I would read quite a bit. And we had some other things, but, you know, I read quite a bit in those days, and that's just something I always did all through the years. And out there, I remember we had the old Stephen King, and you had various other authors like John Coyne that people don't talk about very much anymore. And then there was, you know, there were science fiction books and fantasy books, you know, like J.R.R. Tolkien and things like that. So I just read all different kinds of things at that point. And I was actually when I started writing, and I wrote recreationally a long time ago, but I never really, you know, I suppose in those days I didn't really feel that I had much of a chance, but then I had a lot of people discourage me, you know, over the years as I began leaning toward that of going out and actually being an author and trying to put my work out there. But in time I managed to push all of that discouragement aside and decided the chances drop considerably down to zero if I don't even put forth the effort to hone my abilities and to give
exactly.
it a shot.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So, and, you know, just life in general and the different experiences I've had, those are inspirations as well. And when I first started out as an author, I was actually writing fantasy and horror as well, and there was some dark fantasy I wrote. And it almost came across as I didn't get a lot of appreciation from the fantasy crowd. My stuff was... I got a story rejected because it was just way too dark for the magazine, and I still have that rejection. I was actually kind of proud of that. So you know, I geared my efforts more toward the horror side of things, and that seemed to work out better. But a lot of the time, I just set out to write a story, and I don't necessarily. In some cases, I do set out to write a horror story, but in many cases, I just set out to write a story, and then it ends up being darker themes. You know. Penetrate the work, and just me being me, it ends up being, you know, dark fiction. And dark fiction is kind of an umbrella term that I'll use to describe a lot of my work. So, but yeah, a lot of it is horror, but some of it's just other weird things that end up happening.
What do you think draws readers, and not just you, but other readers to dark fiction and horror? What do you think it is that people get in it that satisfies them?
Well, that could be very complicated depending on the individual, but there are a lot of there is something I've noticed in I did a going around to some of the shows, and in particular horror conventions and things like that, that there are a lot of horror fans who are also fans of heavier music and things like that, you know, metal fans, and I actually listen to a lot of, which not exclusively, but I do listen to a lot of things like that, and I go to concerts sometimes when I have time, you know, enjoy live music, and those are just some of those things are just seem to appeal to some of the people who walk the fringes of society, and maybe it's a bit more of an outsider mindset. And I know when I was younger, I was. So there's but you know, a lot of people just appreciate a good scare as well, and appreciate horror. You know, like the original Halloween, I was a big fan of that one, the John Carpenter version, not the newer remake that they did. But the old one really had a lot of atmosphere, you know, and it wasn't really gory, but. And I just appreciated that. And, you know, when I was a lot younger, I was really imaginative. So the imagination can play a lot of tricks on you, you know. And the unknown can be something very scary, you know, when your mind is spinning random things out of it and creating nightmares or unusual scenarios for you. And so, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, appreciate the experience for a number of different reasons. But like I said, people probably appreciate a good scare, or they just appreciate the amount of something being confronted by something, being there's a degree of heaviness and conflict that goes into a lot of those films and a lot of those books that people probably appreciate as well.
You just mentioned originally about going to, you know, to the conventions. Tell me about some of the conventions you've been to as an author, and interacting with readers and fans. And I think I read that you've just come back from a convention recently.
I did. I just came. The most recent one I did, I actually just did over the weekend. That was Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, and. That's a big horror convention. I'd heard good things, good things about it, and had meant to go out there. And it was actually my first time at that particular convention, and that was a good time. And then I had I've been to Crypticon and a number of others, and I've been to some multi-genre conventions, but this one was a pure horror convention, and that's always interesting to see. All the hardcore horror fans, and a lot of the time those are the people who might be more apt to pick up something of mine. But it's good talking to all the other horror creators, I mean, across the spectrum as well. I mean, you have filmmakers and people like that, and then you just have artists and such, and then you have some of your fellow horror authors occasionally you'll run across. And there were a few actually out there that I spoke with, James Watts, Laurie Roberts, Richard Rumpel. So if they're listening to this show, then hello again. But we all chatted there, and I got to speak to some of the horror fans. People came around my table when I was signing books, and it was all a nice experience. And I like walking around seeing what everyone else is doing when I'm able to, so that can be interesting.
So do you get a lot of questions from budding writers wanting your advice?
Occasionally I do. Sometimes when you get to do a panel or something like that, there are different conventions where I'll be scheduled on a panel talking about writing in some way, or talking, maybe we'll be talking about horror specifically, or maybe we'll just be talking about writing in general, and we'll have people, you know, sometimes you'll have younger authors or newer authors ask you questions at the panel, or even afterward they may come out to your table where you're signing books and what have you and ask some questions. And I'm always happy to talk with people about my experiences, that I know that my experiences don't necessarily encapsulate the experience. Everyone has to find what works for them, to find their own voice and their own pathway to what it is they want to do. But I'm willing to talk about it. I'm willing to help where I can.
Well,
when I can.
Yeah, I can tell you're one of the authors that really enjoys doing the panel and getting to know people and letting them ask you questions.
And doing a panel, sometimes you can learn a lot from other people on the panel because you know, we all come from such different backgrounds and we've all had such different experiences to get to where we are today. So you never know what you might pick up from someone else, and you might be able to help someone else, and someone else may be able to help you just because you have such different methods and different perspectives. So try to remain open-minded to all of that and listen to what others have to say as well.
Now, one thing I want to make sure that I do, and although we still have some time left, I'm going to make sure that everyone knows that if you're listening here, I will be sharing Tommy Smith's social media, how to get his books, how to find his website, how to find out about him. I'll be sharing all that on all of my social media. However, his website is TommyBSmith.com. And, of course, that'll be on my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and everything. And where can people get a copy of The Mourner's Cradle?
You can find a copy pretty much anywhere online, Amazon.com. You can find a copy of The Mourner's Cradle. And I should mention, anyone who orders a copy of The Mourner's Cradle, a digital copy. There's some extra material bundled in with that as well. If you order that now, you actually will get some additional artwork for the story, and as well there's the Mourner's Cradle theme, which is actually a theme music for the Mourner's Cradle, and that's one of the extras that was included. So
really, this is fantastic.
And so, and there's an additional story called Immolation Hymn, which is just a bonus story. So there are a lot of good extras bundled in there with this one. So, but you can definitely find it on Amazon. It's available in physical, as a physical paperback as well, and in digital form, and really anywhere where fine books are sold, I would say. Should have Crystal Lake titles, but as well as The Mourner's Cradle. But.
All right. Okay, and I'll have the exact link to that on all of my social media as well, folks. And you know I will. That's a sweet deal. And speaking of music, if there were, you know, because we were talking about music earlier, if there were, and I've even heard some authors do this now, or poets, if there were a playlist, if you were to create a playlist to go along with any of your books or The Mourner's Cradle, what would it be? Would it be something that you listened to while you played it, or could you... I know this is off the top of your head, so you didn't have time to...
Yeah, I didn't have time to put together a playlist, but, I mean, I can throw some ideas out there that might... you know, I sometimes do listen to music, and I've talked about this with other authors, you know, that have listened to music while they write. And for me, it tends to just fall into the background, but and then I forget about the music. Okay, so I'm immersed in the writing. But, you know, I was talking to somebody a long time ago, even before I was a published author, and they were telling me about this band, Lycia, and they were saying that they listened to them for inspiration. And some of that is atmospheric, almost gothic sort of, it's called dark wave music. So things like that are good. And but then, you know, sometimes you listen to something a lot more, say, energetic and full ahead, you know. I listen to metal, too, so, To me, I just enjoy anything that's intense, and even something that's slow and you know, ambient and atmospheric, that can be intense and heavy in its own way. So, I don't know about a specific. I didn't put together a list of songs, so I've got the Mourner's Cradle theme. I can listen to that, and that would be one. But
And who wrote that and performed it?
That is, I would have to actually look up who it was. I really should.
Okay.
I don't remember right at the moment, but, okay. But it is a very nice tune. So.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that. Okay, so I like the fact that you've got some extra stuff in there for the digital copy, extra material, extra artwork, music. That is pretty fantastic. I'm going to pause for just a moment here with just a just a message, a little, I guess it's a little public service message here, and that gives us each chance to get a glass of water, or at least me, and so we'll be right back with Tommy B. Smith talking about his newest book, The Mourner's Cradle.
So, Chuck, talk to us about Fizdale being the Knicks' new coach. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you right now, Ernie, it don't matter who's going to coach this team. They don't got no talent on
they
it. And I don't really feel like talk.
That's kind of harsh.
I don't feel like talk about the Knicks right
you
now.
Want to talk about lunch?
No.
What would you like to talk about, Chuck?
See, Ernie, I've been listening to a podcast called Madame Perry's Salon. And I think Jennifer Perry, she's a great host. I mean, she got all these bestseller authors, Rostoff, all the comedians.
What about people you that don't have rings?
Here we go.
I got
real
fun
at that. Real fun. But I think she's great, and I think people would love her show. She got a great laugh. She make the laugh come out of nowhere like an eagle come in there and just steal the whole show. It's a beautiful thing. It's not terrible.
You know, sometimes, and Tommy, maybe you think so too, I don't know, you probably haven't heard, but sometimes being told or spoken of as it's not terrible, that's sometimes the best we could get, at least for me.
Yeah, sometimes the not terrible would be welcome.
So, well, tell us a little bit, since we now everybody's all into or excited about The Mourner's Cradle, and especially, folks, don't forget, if you get the digital version, you get some extra stuff. You get some gifts with purchase and extra materials or artwork, and I think that's so cool. Tell us about some of your other work before this for people who are new to you, and they're going to go, because you know when you find a new writer, Tommy, don't you do this? If you find somebody for the first time and you think, wow, where's this person been all my life? I got to find something else they've written. So tell us about some of your other work. Are there Poisonous, Pieces of Chaos?
Sure. Poisonous was, now that one was very much a horror story. That was more of a violent slasher horror. And, then that was that was years ago. That actually first came out in 2012, but it's in a second edition now, so anyone who wants to check that out can find that on Amazon as well. But yeah, that was more of a slasher, and that was the story of a girl imbued with the force of destruction, living poison, and the story of how it affected her and the lives of those around her. And of course, she runs away to join the circus, long story short. And so, you know, but it is a violent story, and so, you know, people should be ready for that. But the hardcore horror fans, you know, probably won't mind. And then Pieces of Chaos was a collection of my short stories, and that's actually how I started as an author, is selling different short stories to magazines and anthologies and things along those lines. And so it collects a lot of work I had published between 2007 and 2012, and then there were some stories that were exclusive to Pieces of Chaos that came out around 2013 when that book came out. And it's back in the second edition as well. So it's a good showcase of the different things I've done over the years for anyone who just wants a taste of different things I've done and who appreciate short stories.
That's a nice title too for Cooper short stories. And Poisonous, just to get to hear, did you say that the main character has a special power, kind of a destructive power?
It is sort of a power, and it is sort of a sickness also. So it's sort of, there's two sides to that coin. So, and that's part of that is her, yeah. Part of the conflict in the story is the conflict between, and her name is Lilac Chambers. And part of the conflict in the story is conflict between this force within her that sustains her, and then her as a human. And so, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, I suppose. I said some time back, you know, that there's a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde in everybody. And in, so that's kind of where that.
Okay, all right. That's, I just wanted to get a better understanding. I guess I thought it was something a little different. I can't think of anybody who's ever worked in a hateful, hellish office job or some kind of a retail or service job that hasn't wished they had some kind of a superpower. You know, like a fire starter, or like, you know, Drew Barry or something like that. I know that, or something Twilight Zone. Like, I can, I mean, come on, everybody's had a hellish job somewhere, right? And when I worked
that can motivate you to write a horror story too.
Oh, I have. Only in my mind. Think about when I used to hustle snake oil. Well, what I mean, that I mean when I that by that I meant, you know, cosmetic sales lady.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I used to fantasize sometimes that I could stop time, like in the Twilight Zone episode or something. I'm the only person that can move. Everyone is just frozen, and I would go, I'd go up to somebody's child, and I would just take a Sharpie and write 665.9 on the back of their neck. Well, that's just me. Well, let's get back to you. So, okay, all right, thank you.
We all have just a little bit of horror in our lives, so sometimes you write about things like that. It's safe, it's best to change the names to protect, you know, not the innocent, but the other people, I guess I'll say.
Exactly, nobody's really innocent. Okay, and Michael Schuler's listening and says he's really enjoying this and looking forward to getting the book. Thank you, Michael. And also Duffy Odom. Says he's really enjoying this as well, and looks forward to reading Mortar's Cradle and learning more about your writing process. Thank you, Duffy, and thank you, Michael, for comments there.
Yes, thank you.
You've got a lot going on, so we'll be able to go to your website, which is TommyBSmith.com, and people will be able to know what's going on with you, where you're going to be. You've got a lot of podcasts coming up, and are you going to be going out on now? Mortar's Cradle was just released on the 14th, just a few days ago. Are you going to be going out on the road with this touring, or are you going to be hitting more conventions?
Let's see. I do have a few more this year, this one I was actually Scarefest. Actually, I was there during book release weekend, so I was able to promote it at the convention, but I wasn't really online a whole lot, and just sort of did what I could, but I was really busy. But I am going to actually go out and do some more shows. There's going to be Imaginarium, which is a sort of a creative convention up in Louisville, Kentucky. And there's all sorts of different creators, filmmakers and artists and authors, and there's all sorts of things going on there. And then I'm going to do a signing at just our local library here. I've done one ever since I had I've done one, you know, for a few years. Every time I have a book come out, I'll do a signing with them too. And then I'll do Memphis Comic and Fantasy Convention. That's in November, and I think that's the last one for this year, because after that we have the holidays and everybody's going to be busy and things are going to be just ridiculous. So,
but you
then I'm going to come back and do the Art Sunday show in March of next year, and that'll be the first of I don't know how many shows I'm going to do next year, but and that's in Oklahoma City.
Yay! Well, okay, and you'll definitely keep us up. We'll be able to find on your website, social media, and so forth, where you're going to be and where we can see you if people just want to come out and meet you, see you live.
Definitely. I'd love to see everybody. If you can catch one of these events I'm going to be at, I always enjoy meeting the readers and people who are interested in what I'm doing and interested in horror and just chatting about creativity and anything else.
I like it. Well, listen, I am so excited that you've come here tonight and talked to us. You know, back in the very beginning of this podcast, one writer, Robert Leland Taylor, who's kind of a Kurt Vonnegut style, he went back and reported that Matt, he says, I've been to Madame Perry's salon. It's like the inside of Jeannie's bottle. So that's why it looks the way it does in here. And, you know, you've always got a seat or a cushion with your name on it. Anytime you want to return, please let me know because we will be delighted to have you back here.
Well, thank you very much. I would love that sometime.
And so thank you. So folks, Tommy B. Smith's brand new book out from Crystal Lake Publishing is called The Mourner's Cradle. And I will tell you how to get it. And don't forget to go to his website. And we're going to close out with our friend Scott Helen from Frenchie and the Punk with Never in the Rocket Century. This is Madam Perry. I love you. Go out and get Tommy B. Smith's book, The Mourner's Cradle.